This is Just Making Conversation, and this is Season 3, that difficult third series.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back.
I am
James Skiffins. Get off the... What you doing? Get off the grass, mate. Honestly.
Don't stand on my grass. I told you before. Get off my land.
I'm just excited.
I am James Skiffins.
And I am Malcolm Childs. And we are Just Making Conversation,
where we discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby, which brings us joy and pain in equal measures.
Oh, I know the pain. From model bases to painting faces and everything in between, we are going to be Just Making Conversation. Remember, there are other podcasts that you could listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
The Triple P Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
Built Sideways.
Model by Gar Biden.
And the Micro Machines Podcast. Well, you're getting very good at doing that Swedish, you know.
I am. Boy,
stop it. Head to modelpodcasts.com for all of those links.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, give us 5 stars, as it promotes this podcast to more people to enjoy.
Showing your support is as easy as making a coffee. Why not go over to buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast and do just that, as your support will help go towards making the podcast and its content palatable.
Possibly.
When I first typed palatable, I typed pale table. In this episode, we will be just making conversation and making a scene with Kathy Millett, discussing her passion for the world of model railways and scenic model making.
We all too often forget the fact that a lot of our skills and techniques are shared with many other hobbies. The same tools and techniques applied in scale modelling can also be applied to model railway layouts, wargaming, etc., 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 etc.
Without meaning offence, we have looked down on other communities, rating them beneath us. A mistake that could challenge some to question the validity of how they spend their time. So we are taking the time to take a closer look at other hobbies. Today on Just Making Conversation, we have a guest.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Kathy Millett, who you may have seen on the telly box. Kathy is currently featured on UK TV's series Hornby, A Model World, and has been on another TV show.
Yeah, that would be a great model railway challenge. Although you may think Kathy is just about railway layouts, there is so many other feathers in her bow.
That's not right, is it? There's no feathers in a bow. It's feathers in a hat.
It is feathers in a hat. I did think that when I said it.
What's the bow analogy then? Strings to your bow, isn't it?
Strings to your bow, yes.
A bow and hat are both feathered and stringy. So before we kick off this interview, I just want to apologise for my audio quality. I had the wrong microphone selected. So I've done the best I can without having to get Kathy back and re-interview her. So please enjoy the interview. So who's Kathy Millett then? Why are we interviewing you today?
I am a full-time model maker. No, before you ask, it makes absolutely no money, but I am a full-time model maker. I guess I've been modelling since about 2000, back in the hobby. And as a child, you know, I had Hornby 00 from my dad and I played with my trains. But, you know, homework, work gets in the way. And I got back to it probably in my late 20s and thought, it's a great hobby. I really enjoyed it as a child. I'll get it out and have another go. And that was in a previous house, and I had a train of, I lived by the tracks and I did the sort of local bit of track down the side of my lounge. And then when I got this house, I put a layout in my loft, and I soon went to a show. I think it was Derby, and it was one of their American years. And I looked at the American stuff and thought, oh, that's really different. And you might notice I love doing different stuff. So I was like, oh, that looks really different to anything I see over here. Mm-hmm. So I ripped out my UK layout over time and started to do US modelling. That layout was on its second or third incarnation, and I ripped it out last year because I realised an important fact about myself. And I think as a model maker, you have to understand your weaknesses. And mine is I get bored easily and I want to try new stuff. I buy far more stuff than I need. I never get around to building it. And I always, when I see something on Instagram, I'm like, I want to do that. I want to do that. And I look at a lot of Instagram. So I did a micro layout instead. And that was on TV last night, finally.
Yeah.
Back a week. So, I just... I like trying new things. And one of the reasons I branched out from just doing model railways is you don't really get much lava on a model railway.
No.
And you tend not to get explosions that often.
There should be more lava and more explosions.
There should be. And aliens and robots and mech, giant mech, you know, just all that. But there isn't. I would like to do a sci-fi train, though. That is kind of on the list.
Ooh, what kind of sci-fi train would you do? Something from the Star Wars. There was a train in Star Wars, wasn't there?
Yeah, they're land trains or sort of hanging trains. I do live streams every month, second Sunday of the month. I tend to do a live stream, and I've done two big series so far, and it gives me an opportunity to do a bigger model than I would fit in my normal recording schedule. So I did Dagobah, that's just sat over there, for the first one. Took about a year. And then for the next one, I did the micro layout that's just been on TV, Port de Norwick. And that was 11 episodes of me creating a layout. And I've realised I can't model and talk and create anything meaningful because modelling takes so long. And if you'd wanted to watch it on a blow-by-blow basis of me building Port de Norwick, I'd never finish it. And I did it in 8 weeks in the end. So what I do is I tend to record it and then talk about it, but put it on fast forward, you know, really fast, so that I can talk about what I'm doing. And then if you're watching me paint something black and it takes me 4 hours, at least for you it's only a few minutes. Otherwise,
you've got a YouTube channel, haven't you?
Oh yes, I have. That's actually probably what I thought I was best known for before I went on TV, was my YouTube channel. But I've been on TV a couple of times and people still talk to me about those, and I'm like, oh, people still remember.
What's your YouTube channel called?
I started it a long time ago, so it's very unimaginatively named, Kathy Millett Modelling.
Ah, right. Okay.
Gotcha. Perfect.
Yeah. Same as your website, isn't it?
Yes. That's just Kathy Millett, though.
Yeah, kathymillett.co.uk.
Yeah. I got it back in the day where everybody just put their names on. That's what it was. I think I started it in 2010, so it's been there quite a long time. And I was a contractor for quite a lot of time, so I would do 3 months breaks between jobs and, you know, do a lot of modelling. And so the channel did quite well growing through that. And I did a lot of tips and techniques. And I went full-time as a content creator 2020, just as we locked down. So it's been a really interesting ride. I don't like being a content creator particularly because I don't like being reliant on YouTube. So it was never the plan. I wrote a book in my first year, which normally is sat here, but I just gave it to Phil from BRM. So I do have a copy around somewhere. But, you know, I wrote a book, Building Realistic Model Railroad Scenery for Carmbac. So I wrote a book, took me a year, and I've sort of worked on the YouTube channel. And I wasn't really sure what to do because I was going to do loads of ebooks and video courses, and I had it all mapped out. And then I was like, I don't really like video editing, so do I want to spend my whole time doing videos? And then I was like, I love the modelling, but I don't really enjoy writing the books because then you've got to spend a lot of time writing. So I can do an article, but writing a book, it's a big ask. It was a year, and they don't actually pay that well.
Did you self-publish it? Or
I could. I mean, Carmbac pay me, but you have to sell a lot. And you normally do ebooks if you're publishing yourself. So I don't know. I wasn't really sure where to go. And then I got involved with a group of people who are setting up a tourist attraction in London that's going to be a miniature world. And they cut a very long story short. I've been involved with them I first spoke to them 3-4 years ago. And I got back involved with them 2 Septembers ago. And they've been looking for funding that whole time. And they had it funded and it hasn't quite gone through yet. So I'm still waiting for the funding to go through, and that would be a full-time job. But because that was coming, I spent the last year thinking, oh, we're about to be funded. Oh, we're about to be funded. So I didn't really put the effort into YouTube that I probably should have. So I'm started this year with a clean slate. And if the funding comes through, it comes through. If it doesn't, well, I'm still enjoying the modelling. I'm having my loft done because it was just a little room before, but now I'm having a proper staircase and having it all done properly. And I'm going to move my workshop out my kitchen so I can cook and eat in my own house again into the loft. And I'm probably going to do some 3D print designs instead. So I actually have a product to sell, because one of the problems with YouTube is if you're not popular, and my channel may look big, but it's not popular, I don't get enough views, and it's a third down on the year before, and it's not enough to live on. So I need to find a way of making money through products. So I'm thinking 3D print design, because I love doing 3D print designs. That's probably my next phase if this new job doesn't come off.
Right.
But underneath it all, I just love modelling.
Yeah. Fantastic. Lots to talk about there.
Ooh, I know. So just the first thing I want to jump on, which is completely random, but with the loft extension, are you going to go for the kitchen look still? Because that's one of the things that's always I've always loved about your videos, is it not only is really explanatory about what you're showing, but the fact it's a case of you can do it anywhere. That sort of always appealed to me. I don't know why. I don't know if that was intentional in any way, but it just elevates. Yeah, it just seemed a really good place. So have you got a plan for the studio as such, or?
Funnily enough, kitchen cabinets do feature quite heavily in it. I'm doing white because I like the idea of having the RGB lights, LED lights, that I can colour the walls if I want. So when I take photos, I can just have a white backdrop. And most people do black. I don't want to sit and work in a black space all day. I just don't. When it goes night and I'm sat in my kitchen and it's dark around me because I've only got my video lights on, it seems gloomy. I don't want that to be all day. And you have to shut daylight out because it's the wrong balance for your lights. And if you don't, you can get yellow, pink, blue shifts through your videos in different directions. And it can look really odd as the day kind of comes through and the sun comes out and goes in. Mm. So I'm painting everything white, so it's more or less just going to blend into the background. But it's still kitchen cabinets, because they are actually the cheapest way to do storage. So there'll be kitchen cabinets behind me, slopey wall behind me, because it's the front of the loft, and then kitchen cabinets all along the side. I'll be working on a kitchen worktop. But it'll be white, so it'll still be kitchen-esque.
Yeah, you also got to use the space as well, haven't you?
Yeah,
I know there are a lot of people who have studios. They will paint them dark so that they can control the light, but they obviously they don't live in there as well, so that would make sense. But yeah,
if you're modeling all day, every day, which is what I normally do, it just I don't know, black. No, I couldn't live with it. I'd be depressed.
Impressive, it is. You're right. You know. I'm in my little room. It's not black, but I know when I'm filming stuff, I've got a couple of studio lights, and everything else is off, which is fine. It's great for the process, but it does. I agree with what you're saying. It almost feels like you're in an overlit area in a gloomy area, and it does affect your work. It does, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah,
well, that's going to affect your mental health as well, isn't it? Isn't that going to affect your mood as well?
I don't know. I've never worked in a black space, but I can imagine it is depressive. And I mean, one of the things I dislike, and I put loads of podcasts on, so I'll be putting yours on in future, is just sitting there in silence or music. Whereas if the sound of voices, I worked in an office for 25 years. I'm an office bunny. I like talking to people, and there's nobody to go and talk to. So I like having sound on just to fill the space, which is why I never record sound as I go. And also I waffle too much. You might not have noticed.
No.
Well, apparently our podcast is very good for cats. So if you have a cat and you want to keep it company, put our podcast on and then go out. You'll be happy.
So you recommend that I put your podcast on and go out? Just to
Yes, that's what a lot of people have done, yes.
Can you tell me about a particular challenging project?
I think almost every project I do something new. I like mm-hmm. trying new things and new techniques. So my biggest challenge is normally time and trying to get all the new things in time. So if you do it for YouTube, and I'm going to row back from doing as many big dioramas for YouTube, I'll still be doing them, there just won't be as many, and do smaller technique videos. But when you're doing something new, you're there and you're thinking, will it work? And if it doesn't work, you have this thought, I know I actually have to totally redo this or just scrap the video, but then I won't have a video. And it's my livelihood to make videos. So the biggest challenge for me is always time. And I think I look at a lot of my dioramas and think, I just got that done and then I videoed it and it went. You know, I didn't spend the last 5% tweaking things or sitting back and looking and making sure it was perfect. So I use an example. I did a hangar recently. I'm Second Dynasty, who do amazing playable interior starships designs. Mm-hmm. And for their latest Kickstarter, they were doing the Beowulf from Traveller. I mean, I'm not into Traveller, but it's a honking great ship. It's like this sort of size.
Yes, yeah.
You 3D print it, takes you a week or so, or more perhaps. And you basically can play interiors and you can swap things around and move things. And I'm on their Discord and the guy in charge, Ben, has been very supportive. He's a great guy. So I'm always happy to do like videos for them to show it off. So I thought I'll do their Rampart fighter, which is a little fighter, space fighter. Looks a bit like a typical jet in some ways, but it's, I was looking at it. And so someone sent me the Traveller plans for the ship it was on and it had hangars. So I ended up doing a massive hangar scene. And then I put this in and I looked at it after it had gone out and thought, you know, I really should have deckled that or done some more to it than just spray it a dark steely blue. I go, yeah, that's done. But I spent so long on the hangar, I was like, and I'm like, that was the central piece. That was what I was supposed to be showing off to everybody. So at the moment, I'm trying to do 3D print design in the morning and model in the afternoon, which has been horrendous with the building works recently because they've been building in all the rooms I'm in. So
just as a curiosity, I know pretty much know the answer, I think, but how do you plan those out, those structures of the videos? Are you like meticulous in what you how you plan out your video, or are you a little bit more fly in a seat of the pants sort of thing?
I record it as I go and then edit it at the end. I mean, like, that's okay. It I always think maybe if I put more effort into the videoing, I'd be more successful. But I have two cameras, so I always have two angles in case I have blocked a wide and a tight. And the biggest problem with the tight is going out of focus, because if you're doing a close-up of a mini figure, they are literally, just literally such a sharp focus plane. You only have to move it to look at it, and it's out camera shot or out focus. So it's really hard to do the close-ups. And I look at a lot of other YouTubers and think, yeah, that's out. And I look at the TV and they seem to be almost deliberately blurry out of shot. I think, whew. I look at some of the Adam Savage ones and I think, you're a really prominent YouTuber. And it always starts out of focus. It's like, ooh, I try and get them razor sharp. You know, I spend ages looking for the one that's in focus out of all the... So I record too many hours, probably. If I had a shot list and recorded to it of this is what I'm going to do, I probably would record less, because I eat through hard drive and I delete most of my footage within 6 months because I just can't keep it all. And I only really keep the final videos. But it's just a matter of, you know, I don't actually know what I'm going to do sometimes till I start it. I have the idea. And then you kind of just build as you go.
What I do. So with YouTube then, is that also a hobby or is that a means to an end? Is it something that you've had to learn or something that you enjoy doing?
I'm not a great video editing fan. I do them because actually it's what content creation is about. I didn't really post that much on Instagram and the rest last year. I did burn out of it all. And because I was expecting a new job, I was like, whatever. Yeah. So I had a bit of a lull. I do feel, I spent the year before trying to improve my YouTube game, but I don't enjoy the editing as much. So if I did smaller videos, the editing would also be smaller. Yeah. Port de Norwich, 8 weeks of work. I had two solid days of footage, most of it double cameraed. So that's a lot to sort through and get down to an 18-minute video.
That's one of the things is with the hobby, as it's matured for me. I don't know if it's the same, but there's so many other things you have to start to get involved with just to do your hobby. So you could just sit here in your own little world and build your railroads and build your aircraft and paint your figures. But if you wanted to share that, you need to learn those extra things. So you need to be quite a good photographer and understand the theory, and you need to be good at putting things up on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram. Do you think that clouds your creative juices?
No, I think I just skipped some of those stages. So Paul Parker came out from BRM, British Railway Modelling, to take photos of my Port de Norwich layout last week. And he spent almost a day here taking photos, and it's only 3 foot by two, you know, it's 900 by 400. And he spent almost a day trying all these angles, getting his camera in, doing this, doing that, you know, moving this, moving that. And I'm like, I just went click, 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 right, that's it, done. So some people really enjoy it. I was chatting to another YouTube creator, and he was like, oh, I love the video editing. I love doing it. And I look at his videos and I can see he loves the video editing, because they're really, that's Rebel Base Build, James. And he does really good videos with really a little bit of humour, just what YouTube likes, you know, great content. And they look really good. And I'm like, yeah, I just film a tutorial style, because that was okay when I started. But the trouble is, when it's your business, you kind of have to do things that don't interest you. But I go back to, I didn't want to be a YouTuber. So that's why I'm going into doing 3D print design.
Gotcha. When you were doing the filming and things like that, were you asked to repeat steps and things like that? If you're being filmed doing something and they didn't get the shot, do you then have to then repaint it?
I just kept stuff aside. I knew what dates they were coming out, and I told them what it was I would be doing that day. So if you look at me going, oh, ow, oh, with the hot glue, I knew that I was going to do some greenery that day. So I deliberately left that to show them that. Mm-hmm. And kind of knew what they'd want. Oh, look, my loco doesn't run. It's because I haven't chipped it yet. You know.
You solved the problem.
Yeah, I solved it.
Well done. I did a photo shoot painting a model, and we all had to look like we were painting it and looking deep into something. And we all had pots of Tamiya paint. And with you leave the top off of Tamiya paint, it's going to dry quite quickly. And so we're all sitting there trying to, you know, holding our poses sort of thing, and the paint started to dry out. It was a yellow. I remember thinking, I'm not going to be able to literally paint any of this paint anymore because it's all dried out. Mm-hmm. But you obviously had to have the paint open to make it look like you were actually doing something.
No, because they didn't film any painting for the TV show, and I film everything as I go, so it's just me filming. I don't do a special setup. I know loads of people repose and show, but when you're doing big dioramas, you tend to just film what you're doing. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you almost, something goes wrong, you tend not to record it because you're so busy trying to fix whatever's gone wrong, like resin leaks. You never see a creator going, oh, and my resin is leaking, let me put the video on while it leaks. It's always like, and my resin leaked last night and I had to mop it up.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. It's one of the things that we talk about quite a bit, isn't it? Is hiding your mistakes in YouTube videos and your social media. You can decide what's shown. But I think as modelers, we need to understand that everything goes wrong, and how you fix things is kind of the fun part of it, if things are going wrong, people need to know that things go wrong, especially if you're a beginner.
Sometimes when I've gone down a complete dead end, thrown something out and started again, just for time in the video, if it was a big piece, I don't put it in, just because otherwise someone gets to watch me make something for 10 minutes and then throw it in the bin. But no, I generally put my mistakes in, or at least mention them. For the Hornby show, they wanted it because that's what TV wants. They want problems that are fixed. That is always the story they're after.
I noticed there's a lots of resin things as well. I'm just looking at your website and scrolling through. There's lots of resin stuff. Is there any techniques or things that you don't want to do? Because you've got, you know, obviously building layouts and things, you're going to have a lot of diorama skill.
To be honest, I don't really like track laying and doing baseboards. I'd rather do the scenery. I felt the laser cut baseboards were very quick that I used for Port de Norwich, but they still took a long time. And when I came to do the videos on Fast Forward, there were hours and hours of me building a baseboard. I'm like, this is so boring. But actually, it takes such a long time. Whereas dioramas, you just put a slab of foam down and get on with it. And the track work, I kept deliberately simple. But I think in future, any layouts I do will be more working diorama style. Like Port de Norwich still had quite a lot of stuff I didn't actually run, because I only had one loco. So I tend to keep it on the front because it's more visible than running down the back. And the people keep saying to me, oh, your wagons look awful because they're rocking so much. And they've got the 3D printed wheels in. But the correct wheels for them, the smoke ones, have been out of stock at the supplier for about 2 or 3 years now. So I'm waiting. Apparently they're due in March. So they may get fixed in March.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. So is that something that neither James or I are railway modellers, but is that something that is picked up on then? Is the movement of them as well as...
And they come off as well. I don't think the 3D prints were... There was a lot of them, you see. I don't think I cleaned them off necessarily as well as I could have. I didn't put the supports on. I probably should have redone them. But somebody gave them me. Very, very happy. Tim Williams gave them me. Got me out of a hole of not having any wheels for my wagons. So that was really useful. And my printer, though, is a very big printer that I printed them on, and I think it just distorted them slightly as well. So there's a bit of cleanup, a bit of distortion. The track is dead level, so it's not that, but they do hump a lot. They're too light as well. They're very, very light, so I need to get some weight in there. So there's some tweaking to do on that. To be honest, I like dioramas because they suit my attention span better. I can get one finished within a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks. I can spend a lot of time designing stuff up front sometimes. But the actual diorama build and whatever is never more than, 3-4 weeks on a big one, unless it's one of my big live stream projects.
With your dioramas, just out of interest, you alluded to earlier the fact that your interest in model railways came from interacting with your father at a young age. Did he have a layout where you did dioramas together, or was that something that came along a lot later?
We did Hornby 00 together, his Hornby 00. Mm-hmm. And I had a 4x8 bit of ply out until I needed the desk for homework, and then it kind of went away. And the Hornby 00 went back in a box, and I actually had it here for a long time, but he's just taken it back and he's got it out and got it running again. I think I went into model railways because that's what I'd done as a child, and I'd had other hobbies beforehand, but and I really enjoyed it. And I got into a group, the NMRA, and I made a lot of friends, and I stayed in it for a long time because of the friendships I made. I think over time I got too involved with the politics, so I kind of dropped out of the railway side. And it's like I won't do competitions now unless they're just a build-along contest. Like I did the original Met contest, I think it's really good. And I didn't do it to take part, I didn't win a prize or anything. So it's not like I'm doing it for prizes. I was doing it because I wanted to do my own mech and it was good to build along with everybody else. It basically has no rules except less than 15% 3D printing, which didn't suit me because I 3D print everything now. And... so I struggle with that, and I can't scratch build that well, really. But you can build anything, just as long as it's an original concept. You can kit bash, you can scratch build, you can do what you like. And it has a lot of people enter. It's really good because there aren't many rules, and it encourages people just to be creative, any design.
How do we find about that then?
Original Mecha Contest. And they're also on Instagram. It starts normally at the start of February. And you get a build pass that you show while you're doing your whip so that you can show you made it for it. So if you want to get involved in it, this is the time to start because it's about to start again for the year. And then it finishes at the end of October. So it's a real no pressure, long burn, do what you like when you like. It's a really great contest. And I join in because, and this year I won't be taking part because of the 3D print rules, but I will still be posting on the Discord to show my designs because I've got plans to do a walker of some sort. I'm actually really inspired by the Thunderbirds pods from Thunderbirds I'll Go.
See, I'm really surprised by your comment there about the fact you're not very good at scratch building. Do you mean that with the mech side of things or just generally?
Scratch build scenery, no problem. To do a mech with the dimensional accuracy and skill, I am, without having a big supply of kit bash parts, because I hate destroying kits to make them into something else. I hate that. So I've got a few parts I've bought specifically to kit bash, but I generally have to buy the parts to kit bash. I just struggled, to be honest, to create what I wanted. And I ended up with almost a sculpture, not a mech. And I knew what I wanted, and it looked nothing like it. And I could have designed and 3D printed it within, a couple of months, and then spent the time painting and decorating. But that's not what the contest is. But this time I will do, I'll just do it alongside on Discord to show them. Because a lot of people seem to think that 3D printing isn't scratch building. It's a different set of scratch building skills. But when you start with a cube and an idea in your mind, you're just designing in 3D space. You still need to print it, which has its own challenges, and then prep it paint it and weather it. And I get people who write to me and say, oh, 3D printing's cheating. And I'll just say, well, have you ever bought a kit? Did you get the oil out of the ground and create the petrochemical for that? That's cheating. You know, if you buy one off the internet and print it, you've still got to put it together like a kit and paint it. It doesn't come out looking painted and ready and weathered. Different set of skills, but still no different to scratch building in my view.
Yeah, and to be honest, with my limited experience with 3D printing, the amount of problems I have to resolve to make it print properly that 15th time or whatever, it feels like scratch building. And I can, you know, I do scratch building with all sorts of stuff. Yeah, that's a conversation, isn't it? Is it cheating or not?
I actually did a video on, is 3D printing cheating? Spoiler, I don't think so. But, you know, I did a video on it. And, you know, there's this thing where when anything new comes along, people worry it's downgrading the skills. You know, when people moved on from balsa wood, I'm sure there was the same thing. When they invented acrylics rather than enamels, people had the same debate. There's always going to be that debate with the people who do it their way. And that's fine if they want to do it their way, but just don't stand in the way of other people doing what appeals to them. Because a lot of children are now taught 3D design at school. So for them, it will be more natural to reach for the 3D design than to reach for a piece of styrene. Mm. Which do you want them in? Creating amazing models and dioramas that they do with a bit of 3D design, or getting discouraged because the bit of styrene never comes out as they want it to?
3D printing being taught in schools, I would love to go back to school and just sit and play with a 3D printer for school.
We had to do home and sewing. It's going to be useful when I do my cosplay.
I'm just looking at this, and it's gone on a bit of a tangent, but I'm just looking at this original mechacontacts.com, and I'm looking at 2022's entries.
Oh, they're brilliant, aren't they?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
There's a range, though. There's people who the first mech they've ever done themselves, and there's others who are practically professional designers. So, you know, it's about the taking part. It's not about the winning with the contest. Mm. And I love looking at people who are better than me to be inspired.
Yeah.
And this is just, I think, a really great way of, you know.
Just the way that they've been displayed as well. There's one mech here that's on a base, and it looks like it's crawling off the base. It's actually using the table that it's on to crawl off it. That's fantastic. Lovely. Yeah. And I'm going to bookmark that.
I'm trying not to look at it, otherwise I'll lose my attention.
And some of them, Rodolfo Ripoli, who I think has won a couple of years, and he's in the pro division now. He always does such great weathering and character and stories in his. And other people just go, well, I've just covered this ping pong ball in bits, and it looks amazing. You know, there's just such a range.
Attention, all scale model enthusiasts. Are you ready for a challenge like no other? Introducing the Flashy Model Company, the ultimate line of scale models for the hobby-hating masochistic maker. Our models are incredibly inaccurate and confusing, with parts that don't fit together and instructions that make no sense. But that's not all. Just to make things extra difficult for you, we remove one random sprue. So why settle for boring engineered models? Get a flashy model from the Flashy Model Company today and see if you have what it takes to conquer the impossible. The impossible. The impossible. The impossible.
Do you see a difference between, like, somebody who's painting a wargaming figure to somebody who's put a train on a layout? Do you see the difference in their hobbies, or do you just think it's all one big model making hobby?
I tend to think of it as one big hobby because I dot across it all. But my YouTube channel viewership would say that most people prefer you to stay in your lane. I learned weathering from military because trains weren't doing weathering very much when I started. I've got the original MIG Productions washes, and I still use them. They're my favourite washes. Neutral MIG Productions and dark wash, neutral and dark, my two go-to washes still. And then back in production now, so I brought some more just in case I ever run out because my three or four pots weren't enough. I was doing a Lara Croft one a couple of years ago, and I wanted to do lava reflected. So I used OSL from, you know, Tabletop Miniatures. Now, I'm not a fan of tabletop miniature painting style. It's not my style. I like a far less contrasty style. I'm not a great fan of baking light in. I see why you do it, though, for tabletop games. So I was thinking the other day of, what should I base my clone troopers on? Oh, let's do Lola Sayu from Clone Wars. I don't know if you're Clone Wars fans. That probably just blew past you. But there's purple rock and yellow lava. And I'm thinking, ah, but if I do them, I've got to light their legs with the lava because it's lit. And I've got to get the lava to look lit. Now, if I was going to put LEDs in the base, I wouldn't worry about it. That's a step too far. Oh, that one's on the later pile, perhaps, with LEDs. But what a miniature modeler would do, would just spray it with a bit of yellow fluorescent. And they'd make it look amazing. But it's not my style. I think I get something from everything. From Gundam, I got a real appreciation of how great Bandai kits are and their use of colour. And I've moved on to spraying lacquers since getting involved with Gundam. And they spray so much better. I spray so much better with lacquers than I do with acrylics. Yes, I have the full mask. I have the full venting externally, the airbrush booth, separate room, everything. And it gives me headaches if I don't. Once I got all that licked, I don't clog anymore. You know, my mum turns up, wants to do something. I can do it for 5 minutes because my airbrush isn't going to clog.
Yeah,
it's so much better. And I got that from Gundam. And right. Gundam are just so different again when you look at what they're interested in, their design aesthetic. I just started doing Star Wars Legion. Mm. I want to design wargaming terrain and I don't play war games. So I thought it might be useful to actually play one. And I don't want to do 40K. A, I don't really like the 40K aesthetic. I'm right. certainly not going to do something with pustules and just, yes. I'm not going right. there. Sorry, I get people love it and that's brilliant. So I'm looking at how I'm painting them and I'm not doing loads of dry brushing and highlighting. And whenever you see anybody ask about painting Star Wars Legion, what colour should I do it? See, I would say, ooh, maybe do it with an ivory white or something. And instead they get you need a grim dark white. And I'm like, why can't people just use the proper names for them? Why are we, and they're always recommending Citadel. I'm like, I don't own a Citadel paint. I'm not going to go and buy Citadel paints. I'm going to use a Gundam colour that's called white and add maybe a little bit else into it. And from Model Railways, I learned the full scene. And that's probably why I do dioramas, because you don't just do a model. And I went to IPMS at Telford and there are some stunning models there. And there are just, there's a table of tanks. And I just look at it and I think, your stunning tank model is just lost in that crowd. It's such a shame because you have done an amazing model there. And it's next to one that looks like it, and one that looks like it, and one that looks like it. And to me, I look at them and think, you'd look so much better on a diorama. There's no one way to do it. Everybody gets to do what they enjoy.
So I share a passion that you have, which is dioramas. It's my style of model making, and I totally reflect to you the comment you just made about sat on a table by itself. I get it, and I understand it, and if that's what someone wants to do, that's fine. But for me, it's a lot more about the story. To me, that makes the subject come alive. If it's on a diorama, to me, it becomes more a personal experience to look at and obviously to make. Where do you get your inspirations for the diorama experience you make on a diorama or on your layouts? Are there particular things or places you look for?
I'm inspired by what, and this is why I do a lot of sci-fi, what I watch on TV and what I play on my games. So I played Fallen Order and I'm like, oh, Lava Factory. Just mentioned that. My favourite game is Titanfall 2. I adore that game. I love the game mechanics. And Fallen Order is actually done by the same game company, which is why, because the movement is so similar. I think that's why I really like Fallen Order. And I struggle with movement in Battlefront by TIE Fighters and X-Wings. It's just not my thing. I want to shoot people. I really adore that art book. I've got the art books for Titanfall. I often have up on my screen some of their concept arts. And when I'm designing sci-fi, I'll often go back to their aesthetics. It really rings with me. But Mass Effect was another one that was a big inspiration on their design. And so, you know, I'm trying to design a spaceport at the moment. I am looking back at the video games. Also TV, you know, I might look at something and go, that's a really good pattern on that. So Clone Wars, they had a lot of, I think there were octagons with squares on a grill. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to take a photo. Disney Plus, you can't screenshot. I'm just going to take a photo of the TV. I've got hundreds of photos of the TV now, of various scenes from the Clone Wars with interesting architecture. Oh, and so I get my inspiration from what I watch. And it's obviously what I want to do is do it at the time. And then I've got a massive backlog, so I never get around to doing them. So then I'll start it or put it on the list and then start something else further down. But I watched all the Thunderbirds after deciding to do the Thunderbird diorama. But I saw that at IPMS, which is one of the things I was thinking about. So after deciding that, I watched all the Thunderbirds, and all the Thunderbirds are go. And I do prefer the Thunderbirds are go. The one thing I really noticed, and you asked about what kind of train I would do, there's a lot of monorails in the future, apparently. Everyone goes monorail. So I would like to do a maglev type of train as a sci-fi one. But the trouble is propelling it. The maglevving is easy, sort of levving bit. And I've got magnetic tape that will do that. But getting it to actually move, that's the trick. And then if I wanted to design that and sell it as an option for somebody, and I'm going to do Kickstarters probably, I need to think about, well, you know, I'm not going to sell physical products. So if I spend all this time designing it, can anybody else do that? Or is it going to be just a fixed train? And I actually was looking at Lego trains thinking, well, it's 1 to 48, roughly, the scale that I'm working in. It's about 1 to 46, 1 to 48, the Star Wars Legion. Or it's about 1 to 60, 1 to 59 or so, if you're going down to 28 mil. So you want to be designing in that lot. And actually, the Lego trains are apparently close to 1 to 48. Yeah. So I'm, you know, I'm bouncing ideas around like that. Interesting chatting to people about what they want from wargaming terrain, because it's very different to D&D terrain, RPG terrain. They're all very different about what you want to do. And I think you need to pick one that suits you and do it. So the one I picked was Star Wars, because, you know, I was a Trekkie when I was a child. But then they had Mando, and I was like, okay. And then I watched the Clone Wars, and I'm like, oh, Captain Rex, Ahsoka, my two favourite Star Wars characters.
One of the things I noticed about a lot of your work is you've got the word vista comes to mind when I look at the photographs, at least. You know, you've really thought about the space in there. So like the Halo Infinite photographs you've got of the I don't know the name of it, Jeep buggy
Warthog
thing. Thank you. The Warthog is driving along and all the smoke's coming out the back.
Yeah.
You've also got this big mountain in the distance.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a vast space, and obviously these games are sandboxes, aren't they? You know, you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that comes across.
You can't go anywhere. You get to the end and it just says return to mission area.
A big space is what I'm saying.
It is.
And there's also a photograph of a truck in front of loads of greenery, and it's just going downhill.
Oh yeah, that was on my layout.
It just looks huge. It looks absolutely immense.
And about 18 inches deep. I do make my dioramas really big to get those vistas, and then I run out of space for them. So that Halo one is about a meter long and 35-40 centimeters deep.
Okay.
It fits just, it hangs off the back of my bookshelf. People say to me, where's the Master Chief? He's not driving. He is, he's just really low slung, so you don't see him so much in the photos.
Oh, he's kicking back, is he?
He's like, no, I'm cool. But he's got his helmet on at least. If you look on the right hand side, there's blue foam and unballasted trap.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes, there is. Yes.
Blue you just don't notice.
So, no, I wasn't looking for that. I was looking. I'll look at the way that the trees are in the background comparative to the ones in the foreground.
I use this as an example a lot when I'm modelling about how I recommend people do depth of field in short distances. And I actually did a whole chapter on it in my book because I'm so excited by it as a concept. So the front trees are always really important, wire trees with real leaves. The middle trees, which are the one on my left, is like a commercial tree that I've added some extra leaves to and a bit of lighter colour on top, so it's got a bit of variation. But it was bought as a complete tree, and I've pimped it effectively. And then the back ones are cheap wire trees from eBay that I added a uniform colour to, because by then you don't see branches or trunks. You literally just see a bit of canopy. And so that was how I try and force perspective with trees in just a few inches.
Do you enjoy the process of it then?
I like the designing bit first, which is why I want to do 3D print design, because I actually do like designing stuff more than building it quite often. So I've got a pile of Thunderbird kits here for the Thunderbird series I'm doing next. So my next live stream is Tracy Island Thunderbirds. And my first video live stream will be all about the design process, because I haven't actually decided what I'm doing yet. So I'm going to talk to people about what they'd like to see, what would interest them. I've got my ideas, and just see, is it going to float the boat? If they're going to look at it for a year, they may as well at least want to see what I'm doing. And it's going to be fascinating, I think, because I like the designing more, but I look at it and I'm starting to recognize that I spend all day. So now I spend all mornings designing, I spend afternoons modeling, and then I generally spend all evening designing. But I want to rewatch The Clone Wars, so I'm struggling to not just watch The Clone Wars for inspiration with all the planets. I'm like, oh, look at that grill. And I'm playing Halo, replaying Halo as well. I'm like, oh, look at the pattern on that bridge, Mum. My Xbox is at Mum's, just to get it out there. I can't see it because I have so much stuff in my lounge. All this piles here is building work. My lounge, I can't see the TV from any of the, I can't get to the chairs because there's boxes in front of them. So over Christmas, I took out my Xbox and took it round to Mum so I could actually finally play after a few months. And right. We played Jedi Fallen Order, Battlefront 2, and we're just doing a redo of Halo. She likes sci-fi. That's where I got it from.
Brilliant.
But they did have Sullust, a lava factory. Ooh, I'm thinking lava factory.
You like your lavas?
I do like lava. It glows. It's shiny.
Everything that I try and do, I try and do as cheaply as possible. It's not just a case of saving the money, but it's more a case of trying to find something that I can utilise to make what I want. That I like that part of the process.
That's so, why I have a lot of tile grout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tile grout queen.
But with that said, what would be your best money-saving tips?
I would say if you want to do water cheaply, paint it the colour you want it to be, paint it really well, and use a PVA glue over the top. Don't put it on thick, just a thin shine. And it may gloss, so you might do better. It may go a bit white if you have a damp atmosphere, so it might be better to do it with a gloss Mod Podge that doesn't re-white as much. But that's just so cheap to do your surfaces with. And you don't need to do resin unless you want a sort of stony bottom stream or river. Uh-huh. But most waterways, you don't necessarily see that far down. And for a lot of people, do a turgid ditch, which is covered in gunk. You know, you're not going to see the bottom anyway. So there's no point doing it in expensive resin with all the issues. And I could spend a lot of money on resin and then only use half of it. And then my next projects don't have it and it's gone off by the time. It's gone brown, some of them. Do recommend PVA glue for everything. I buy it 5 litres, the washable stuff. It's not quite as strong. But I'm using it with tar grout mostly. And that's my other thing. Buy a bag of tar grout and a bag of silver sand or the stuff you put down on your block pave drives, you know, that
very fine sand.
Not the orange sand. And just buy it in a couple of colours. If you want to do a beach, buy beige. I recommend something like a taupe or a raw umber style of brown, depending whether you're doing a rich loamy earth or a, you know, slightly more arid, dry earth. And you can actually buy mosaic grout. So I got a terracotta one in mosaic, which is a smaller packet as well. But, you know, if you're doing something small, tar grout goes a long way and it's so versatile. And I use it in almost every product. I have to force myself not to use it. I either sprinkle it on dry and get a great texture and then spray it and drop it. And occasionally it won't sit right because it's quite fine and the glue will pool and you have to put another layer on. If I'm doing a thick layer, I mix it with PVA glue and water just to thin it. And I use it like a paste. And that's my terrain paste. And people go out and they spend a fortune on AK Interactive terrain paste. I've got some muds to try. And, you know, they try all these things and they spend a fortune on them. And if they're just doing bases for minis, that might be fine. But if you're like me, you use half the pot and then the other half goes off. And that's a £4 pot, whereas you can spend... Yeah. quite a bit on a big bag of tar grout that will last you your whole modeling life. I've finished one bag in all of my dioramas so far, and that was a 2.5 kilo bag. So it lasts forever and it's self-colored, so you don't need to paint it. That's one thing I don't get about people who come from a Warhammer terrain sort of background. They paint everything black and then paint it, and I'm like, look at all those beautiful colors you had in the grass, you just sprayed in black. I don't get it. Yeah. So different styles, you know, they're really happy with it. Gives them exactly the finish they want. Me, I like to use the tar grout in the colour that I want, and I mix and match it, and I'll put in talus, and I might paint the talus if it's woodland scene. It's because it's normally pale grey. But other than that, I just tend to, you know, I'll paint my rocks, and that's about it. Everything else is as it comes out of bag.
That's brilliant. That's a good tip.
Tips. Sorry, that was PVA glue and tar grout. Two tips.
No, I like that.
Price of one. Buy 5 litres of glue and use it in everything. It's brilliant. Just glue it. It's perfect.
Where can people go to find your work? Where should people head to?
So I do have a website, Kathy Millett, and you just have to spell me approximately right, but it's Kathy with a K and then Miller, M-I-L-L-A-T-T. Mm-hmm. You'll get close because there's nobody else with my name out there. So it's either kathymillett.co.uk or it is Kathy Millett Modelling on Instagram or Facebook. And I have a Discord, which is linked somewhere, I think on my links page on my from Instagram, that you can get to if you want to join my Discord and chat to me there. I'm always happy to chat modelling and, you know, talk to people. And we've had some great conversations about sexism in the hobby earlier. That was quite cool.
Awesome. Yeah, we did a podcast just about that, about diversity within the hobby. That itched some people's backs, didn't it?
Three women, if you include me, and a bloke. And he's going, I had no idea it was like this. It's like, what triggered it actually was a fairly innocuous. I wanted to sell terrain. And at the weekend, I was out with someone who does wargaming a lot. And he said, do a different name, because if you're a woman, you won't sell into that crowd. You know, you'll do better if you're, it's not clear you're a woman, because some of them are quite sexist. And I know what I'm going to do it as. I'm still looking for feedback on it, but I'm probably going to go with Saverna Systems, because I named my first spaceport Saverna and I have no idea why I picked it, whether I'd read it, seen it, or just, I don't know. And also, using your name looks a bit big-headed. People think I get in it for myself. And it's like, no, just back then, everybody used their names on their channels.
Yeah.
We did.
Depends what your brand is. If you're selling the name Kathy Millett as a brand, then that's what you should be using.
I'm still up in the air, and I can see that trying to sell on a Kickstarter for terrain, it would be better with a sort of more company name than with a personal name, I think. So it's something I'm still thinking about.
Okay,
fantastic. Indeed.
Brilliant conversation. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend an hour with you and have a chat on a subject in which we both hold the same passion for. Well, thank you so much.
I miss talking to people. It's the one thing about being a full-time modeler is you are on your own all day. I'm sorry this is more talking at, but you know, it's been still great to have you there.
It's been brilliant. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Brilliant. Thank you.
While we're all guilty of mocking each other's interests in good humour for the sake of banter, with such phrases as falling down another rabbit hole or going into the dark side,
we can learn so much from each other if only we take the time and trouble to see them as another branch of the hobby, sharing skills and techniques that we can all use to improve and bring to life our passion. Model railways at least run on time.
Next time in Just Making Conversation, we'll be talking about other subjects that are daft and relating to our hobby. You've been listening to Just Making Conversation with
James Skiffins
and the amazing Hagrid Childs. I mean, Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post the photos, the updates, and some nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and all the others.
Let us know what you are just making and what your thoughts are on the conversation in this episode.
Thank you for the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast.
Kieran, Just the Legume, Craig Nichols, Elliot, Robert Lane, Dean, Mike Shelley, Ivana, Build and Model Kit, Callum from Micro Machines Podcast, Paint All the Meanies, Peter, Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark Bekawahi, Simon the Jersey Jet, Steve Lee, Costas, Mark Ray, Neil, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Jew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and 8 others.
If you do show your support, leave your name so we can paint the roll of honour on the tale of next episode. Goodbye.
Goodbye.